excited to welcome Tim Draper, a key venture capitalist investor in Silicon Valley, founder of Draper Associates and Draper University, and a Bitcoin expert, one of the first big Bitcoin billionaires, I guess, who Brock Pierce calls a good friend, a ringing endorsement. Welcome to the show, Tim Draper.
Terrific. Thanks for having me.
So great to have you. I wanted to begin with Draper University. You have a unique, almost entrepreneurial-focused incubator. You've also teamed up with ASU, a semester in Silicon Valley, I think, one of the programs.
We call it hero training, and we decided that we would create the school that was unique and encourage people to be able to go out there and do extraordinary things, even though sometimes it's embarrassing or challenging to stand out. We wanted to make sure that these people would be willing to stand out and encourage them to take that first step toward becoming an entrepreneur. School has been incredibly successful. We're only 5 years old, and we already have one student who has become a unicorn. He has a billion-dollar token called Cutum, and we have one woman who started a business that could detect cancer inside the fallopian tubes without damaging them, and she just sold her business for $275 million. So this is working, and both those businesses would not have been built without Draper University.
I've seen you actually grooming or at least reviewing some of your students' critique, if you will, on their startup presentations.
Certain days where we coddle them and certain days where we're rough on them. That's one of the days where I'm pretty rough on them to make sure that they're thinking everything through or going after something big enough to matter or maybe just thinking through their business and making sure they know how to make money.
It seems to give people hands-on, real-world experience. Move on to the narrative that everyone just seems to be interested in, and that's magic internet money. You've noted in other interviews that there might just be something to this Bitcoin phenomenon.
It was a Korean friend of mine who told me that he hired a man to be his avatar while he was at work so that he could rise higher in this virtual world that was consuming 40% of Korean people. And then he bought his son a sword for his birthday for $40. He told me about it. And the sword was just pixels on the screen. It was just a virtual sword. And it got me thinking that the virtual world was going to be a big part of our world. And so I was watching for virtual currencies. I was hoping to find one. And when Bitcoin came along, it was really an extraordinary currency, being decentralized, fully secure, global, open, and frictionless. It suddenly created a new currency that just the fact that it's virtual is a real benefit, but the fact that it's so much better than our fiat currencies, it's not subject to any political whims. You can send it cross-border easily. You can use it to store value. You can remit to your family in the Philippines or whatever easily, and it's secure. The Bitcoin blockchain, knock on wood, has not been hacked, but banks are being hacked all the time. The banks are playing whack-a-mole as hackers are chewing holes in their shield. And I think Bitcoin came at just the right time. We need a currency we can count on, we can trust. It's going to be harder and harder to trust our banks and our fiat currencies. In many countries, they've never had much faith in their fiat currencies. A friend of mine who started Ripio, Sebastian Serrano from Argentina, said that he had lost his family fortune. His family had lost their fortune three times in his lifetime just to mismanagement at the top, and he was only 30 years old. He said, well, so no one in Argentina trusts the peso, but they are all really embracing Bitcoin. So this is really a great new opportunity for people. And I think it comes at the perfect time when people are starting to lose faith in the banks and lose faith in fiat currencies. It's a perfect time to bring on a currency that's as solid as Bitcoin.
Well, that really was, I think, the vision of the founder of Bitcoin. The individual was starting to give up on the system back in 2008, 2009, as we saw the great recession unfold. And I think you touched on another really important point, and that's the cross-border, the international aspect. There was an article released, you may have seen in the last week, where an individual sent $19 million internationally, and it cost them, I want to say, 68 cents, and it was nearly instantaneous. The same transaction, according to the article, $100,000 and taken days.
That's right. I mean, it would have taken days, and you probably would have had 15 lawyers in the middle of it and plenty of accountants and brokers, and now you can just sort of shoot it across. It's so much nicer and so much more secure and so much easier. Bitcoin is really transforming the way we do business, transforming the currency, the commerce, banking. Eventually, it's going to transform finance. Then the blockchain is a whole new technology. The blockchain used for Bitcoin is a whole new technology, and it can potentially be used to transform other industries because it's a secure and perfect ledger. If I were to raise money in Bitcoin and invest it into companies in Bitcoin, and then those companies, if they paid their employees and their suppliers in Bitcoin, and then used Bitcoin when they bought whatever it is that they bought, there would be no need for any kind of accounting because the blockchain keeps a perfect record of all of that. So that trusted third party that used to be the bank and the accountant and the outside accountant auditor is no longer going to be needed. So that's going to be a really interesting transformation. And then the other thing is if you apply two or three other new technologies to the blockchain, if you take Bitcoin, the blockchain, smart contracts, and artificial intelligence, you can actually completely replace a government bureaucrat. It would be perfectly honest. It would be fair to whatever regulations were set, and it would be incorruptible. So there are some things in our future that are going to be very bright lights. We're going to see some amazingly great things happen. I believe that governments are going to have to compete for us because some governments are going to adopt this, jump in, and they are going to attract citizens and entrepreneurs and businesses.
You've also found some other projects, including Tezos Project. Actually brought that to our attention here. It's already been very successful, even though it's still sort of in a pre-stage.
Yeah, those are two really great people who got the Tezos started. They had more excitement around their technology than even we expected. And the Tezos coin, or the pre-coin, I guess it is, has been very popular. And we're hoping that they ship their coin on time. What's great about it is that it uses proof of stake rather than proof of work, and it has the promise of being like Bitcoin or Ethereum and be very good with smart contracts, but also be very fast and very energy efficient. Great hopes for it, but it's still out there in the beta phase.
Exactly. It was the proof of stake, I think, that really piqued my interest. As you say, it's less energy intensive, it's more efficient, and it might, just might, be the future for certain types of transactions on the blockchain, whereas maybe Bitcoin might be viewed more as a store of value, digital gold. About a month ago, when Bitcoin touched about 6,800, you made a very bold announcement. In the next 4 years or so, by 2022, I think, we could see an explosive move on Bitcoin's price. Do you care to outline what led you to that conclusion?
There's $86 trillion, roughly, in fiat currency today. Fiat currency will be eclipsed by Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies over the next 4 or 5 years as people realize that they are more frictionless, easier to move, easier to use, and not subject to some political force or whims. And right now, Bitcoin and all cryptocurrencies add up to about $300 billion market cap. That leaves about 500 times the value that could be created, even if crypto becomes a third of the market, that leaves a very big margin for Bitcoin and others to achieve that number. And I assumed that Bitcoin would be one of maybe the top three or four cryptocurrencies of the world, so the market, their market share would be somewhere around 20%. Even if it's 20% over some period of time, it gets to be 20% of, say, $40 trillion. There's a long way to go. And so Bitcoin could be in the millions, but I think that you could, on its way to being in the millions, 4 years is a good estimation for when it might cross 250,000. So I did some math, but I also sort of felt the spirit, and I felt that the world was ready for this. Some governments are trying to fight it, and some governments are embracing it. The ones who are trying to fight it are losing all their entrepreneurs, all their best entrepreneurs, and the ones that are embracing it are attracting great entrepreneurs. Like China is fighting it, and Japan is embracing it. It's Bitcoin's a national currency, one of the national currencies. They've got the yen and Bitcoin as their two national currencies. And that has attracted some great entrepreneurs to Japan. And so you're going to see that kind of give and take and the plate tectonics that happen because some governments are trying to shut it down and some are trying to embrace it and drive it forward. And most banks are trying to shut it down, but a few banks are embracing it, moving forward. And I think the same thing's going to happen to the banks. Banks, all they have to do is start to see a little bit of contraction and then people start running on the banks and moving their money from fiat to crypto. And I think Bitcoin will be a safe haven there. Society creates the right things at the right time. And Bitcoin looks like it's going to be a great saving grace.
No, it's a great point on Japan. Actually, it's legal tender, Bitcoin, in Tokyo, all around the country. And a country known for being progressive technologically, but cautious as far as economics are concerned. So it's a petri dish, if you will, playing out in real time. And maybe given its decentralized nature, maybe that's part of what's concerning the People's Bank of China and officials next door.
Chinese government has gone from one that was free and open to one that's closed and oppressive. And the oppressive government always ends up with population that falls way behind the world. And the free and open governments become the ones that succeed and become wealthy. China was free and open for 40 years, and under Deng Xiaoping, they really made great progress. Now they're going completely the other way to a dictator and a billion slaves. It's a horrible change. But in Japan, that was a brilliant move to accept Bitcoin because all of these great Chinese entrepreneurs are now looking and saying, hey, why don't we start a business in Japan where we are welcome?
Would you also say it maybe provides a parallel, a monetary system in the event of a geopolitical tsunami, anything that might disrupt the overall economy, you know, a backup system in place?
Yeah, well, it's also 3 or 4 billion people in the world that are unbanked and unbankable because banks have so much regulation, they push people away if they don't have enough money. And so the unbanked is this huge population that can now use Bitcoin. They can be a part of the world economy with this. And in oppressive countries or countries where the currency is not trusted, people can have their Bitcoin. And even if the government seals all the fiat currency or inflates it or does whatever they do, people who have Bitcoin will at least have some stored value so that they can get started again and they don't have to start from zero. When a country goes down, all the people then suddenly are completely impoverished and they go straight to zero. So this is a great opportunity for all of them. Who knows? It could be us that gets that, you know, if some politician makes a wrong move, suddenly the dollar's not worth anything, and then you've got this big opportunity to restart, have some Bitcoin.
We might be seeing that scenario you've outlined already occurring in slow motion as investors and just everyday folks search for an alternative to fiat money, which supposedly is so stable. But take a look at Venezuela, as you pointed to earlier, in Argentina, and this can change overnight almost.
Yeah, it can. I mean, and people say, oh, that could never happen to us. Well, and I'm sure they're thinking that in China. China, if their growth rate slows just a little, they're 240% of GDP that's in debt will crush them, and they will inflate, and the people who are just holding renminbi are going to go down with that ship. Here in the U.S., same thing's possible. Our debt level is not as high. It's 100% of our annual GDP, 105. Our growth rate is not as high. So we have a couple of bad years of economics, and we could end up having the dollar not be worth that much. Hedge your bets. Get some Bitcoin.
On the financial institution revolution that might be headed towards the crypto space, you've talked about a $300 billion market. As more acceptance and more fiduciary alternatives enter this space that give big institutions, pension funds, and related funds more confidence that they're protected within the cryptocurrency, and there's more liquidity with the CBOE and other exchanges having derivatives contracts. Do you see large institutional funds maybe sending us to the next level?
Yeah, I think fiduciary of fiat currency, you are being irresponsible by not having some exposure to Bitcoin and crypto. As a fiduciary, you have an obligation to make sure that your clients are well protected from a lot of different things. You're always looking for what could potentially go wrong because you want your client to always be okay. If they have no exposure to crypto, I think they are making a huge fiduciary error. And it does look like companies like Coinbase, you know, where you set up your Coinbase account and you can have a crypto account. I think they are having a free run of it as crypto becomes Bitcoin and crypto become a bigger and bigger part of our economy because all of the banks are not accepting crypto. So Coinbase has had a free run. If no one else is accepting crypto, you have to go to Coinbase as the legitimate wallet for cryptocurrency in the U.S. This is a really interesting time, and it's really fun to watch the dynamics. Quite exciting.
It is, and you know, your comments and really the crypto space in general, I think, speak to just how economics as a profession is slowly here becoming irrelevant. That centralized thinking and the whole idea of central banking as the go-to, the only place to turn to for any financing and for our money and any transaction. And here comes the blockchain and its transparency and its efficiency, availability, as I think you pointed out, from the streets all the way to the ivory towers. I think you should tongue-in-cheek here, but maybe offer a class for economists at Draper University.
I mean, if I were an economist, I would look at this as the most exciting time in the history of the world. And most economists are regressing to the past. But I think this is a great time for an economist because they're saying, oh my gosh, we're going through it. After all these years, we're finally going through something that's going to be a real sea change. And we get to be riding right on the top of it. And you know, an economist should look at this and say, this is so awesome. But they do tend to be clinging to their old ways. I do think that the central bank has historically always gotten it wrong and has driven us deeper into recessions when we are in a recession and driven us higher in a boom than we should have gone. And what's great about the Bitcoin world is that it doesn't have individuals sort of overreacting and lowering the interest rate when things are going super well and raising it when things are not going well. And so it'll damp those cycles and we won't have to suffer the way we do.
Exactly. And, you know, it has the added benefit if we're thinking of it as digital gold, because it has that limited supply and the nil inflation with difficulty going up regularly with Bitcoin. They can't use quantitative operations or QE to manipulate the supply. There is a fixed supply. And then those of us who actually use Bitcoin know that you have these little transactions where there's dust. You lose, I don't know, 10 Satoshi or 1,000 Satoshi, which is nothing in terms of US dollars, but it evaporates forever. So there's almost a built-in demand and limited supply.
Well, that is true. Hopefully people don't lose any more Bitcoin. I know a lot went into where people lost their Bitcoin at early times when they didn't think it was worth much. So my guess is that there's supposed to be 21 million Bitcoin out there. I think probably 2 or 3 million of them are lost. But still, it is a fixed number of them. And that's good because you know that there's no government out there that's trying to print them. I encourage your listeners to read my book. It's called How to Be the Startup Hero. Any would-be entrepreneurs who have hero in their blood, have them think about applying to hero training at Draper University. Summer program of 5 weeks, and we have a fall program of 4 months. We do some executive training, too.
We'll have the link up here for you. How to Be the Startup Hero, a guide and textbook for entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs. You probably can't get into an Uber without the Uber driver trying to pitch an idea for a startup.
Yeah, how true that is. Usually just give it to them straight right off the bat. So no need to come back at least for a year. It's funny. The reason I say at least for a year is that people who stick with something for a year are much more likely to succeed than the ones who just come by with an idea and then a year later they've got another idea. 3 years for like a restaurant to succeed. Sometimes it takes a while for the world to catch up. I do appreciate those visionaries who are really thinking long term. But I also encourage them in my book because then it will give them a few ideas for how to really think about their business, and they might end up with a better business after reading through it and doing the exercise.
All right, Tim Draper, we thank you so much for making time for us today.
It's been my pleasure, and thanks for having me on the show.